And welcome back. This is Daily Buddhism audio show number 37. My name is Brian Schell, and I'm your host for the show. You can find the text as well as all links mentioned in this program and all past episodes on our website at www.dailybuddhism.com. Send in your questions, comments, suggestions, and thoughts to me at dailybuddhism@gmail.com. And we only have just a few very short announcements this week. As I mentioned last time, I've gathered all the various ways to get Daily Buddhism content together in one place for an easy sign-up. www.dailybuddhism.com/sign, S-I-G-N, has places to sign up for the free daily newsletter, the free weekly podcast, the free RSS feeds, and the weekly Buddhism PDF magazine. It's all very easy. And as always, the main home site for the show is dailybuddhism.com, but if you're also on Facebook, and many of you are, you might also want to visit our new fan page at dailybuddhism.com/Facebook and become a fan of the show and receive updates through Facebook. And maybe you also want to go to the fan page for taooftheday.com/Facebook if you're a fan of their other site. And now, on with this week's show. And as we often do, we started out this week with a question from a reader. I wonder if you can give me a pointer for following the path. My understanding is that we should be in the here and now as much as we can, yet as a teacher, I have to be aware of what I've taught so I can plan what I will teach next. This means I'm often not in the here and now. I teach French and German at secondary school. Okay, well my answer to that is be here now. Something you've heard me say and probably have heard many others say many times. But there's a lot to this simple phrase that goes way beyond planning for the future or remembering the past. There are two concepts that are important to this idea, time and place. For time, I don't think being in the present means that you cannot think about the future or the past. We all have to make plans and have certain expectations about the future, and there's nothing at all wrong with that. Even monks, or abbots at least, have to make some kinds of plans. Otherwise, they couldn't manage a monastery or organize any kind of Dharma teachings. Actually, not planning for the future can cause no end to suffering. The current global economic crisis is proof of enough of that. It's fine to consider and plan for the future. Just don't get too attached to your plans. When situations change, be flexible and adapt. Don't get caught up in the plans, and don't spend time worrying about them. As a teacher, you create lesson plans, possibly for weeks in advance. You also know that no matter how carefully you plan, things are always going to come up that will derail your plan. You have to accept that in advance and take surprises as they come. Don't worry about changes and problems. Expect them and deal with them as they arise. Worry is a terrible distraction and it's unhealthy as well. And that was regarding time. As concerns place, are you present? Is your mind here, or is your mind elsewhere? Whatever you're doing, be present and aware of it while you do the task. This is more about your concentration than anything else. Being present means that you are focused on what you are doing. In your case, let's say you're working on a lesson plan for next week. You are thinking about next week, and that's fine. You have to do that as part of the task. If, however, you're also thinking about the latest episode of American Idol, or what color to paint the house, or what you're having for dinner, that's not good. Your task at hand is making up that lesson plan, and all the other stuff is just a distraction. Whatever you're doing in the present time, be fully present. That is, whatever you're doing in the present time, be fully present in mental location. Be here now. Basically, it all concerns focusing on the task at hand, thinking clearly and on one thing at a time without distracting thoughts. If you have 20 different things that you're mentally dealing with at one time, you cannot be fully present. Clear your mind, and whatever you do, pay attention to that, and lose the distractions. Meditation is a big aid in mastering this, as you will quickly learn to put aside distractions. It really does work. Now, this idea also involves moving from moment to moment, taking each moment for what it is, not letting the past or future influence you in any way. This is another form of non-attachment.
Hey, Brian, this is David from West Haven, Connecticut. I'm calling to thank you for your podcast and let you know that over the course of the summer and early fall, I had been doing some third-step recovery work, and I was on the beaches here in West Haven listening to your podcast and really coming to terms with myself and my recovery. And I was requesting maybe that be a subject during one of your daily Buddhisms. If you could speak more about Buddhism and the Eightfold Path and maybe some of the 12 Steps of Recovery, that would be great. I would appreciate it. Thank you so much. Looking forward to next week's podcast. Bye.
And David, you have just won a free month of the weekly Buddhism PDF magazine. Give me another call or send me an email and I'll get you fixed up with that. And you can get your question played on the air. Just call me at 937-660-4949 and leave your question on voicemail. If I use your question on the show, you too will win a free month of the weekly Buddhism. Okay, well, the 12-step program is very famous for the Alcoholics Anonymous program and many other kinds of recovery formats, but I really don't know anything about that, so I can't answer that question. So I found someone who could. I asked Darren Littlejohn, an expert and author of an upcoming book called The 12-Step Buddhist, on the subject to help. So he explains. My name is Darren, and I'm a 12-step Buddhist. I got hooked on drugs when I was about 16, got sober at 22, and stayed that way until 32. Then something happened, and I found it necessary to get loaded again. I returned to sobriety in 1997 and have been clean and sober since. The way I work my recovery program integrates Zen and Tibetan Buddhism, psychotherapy, and the 12 steps. Buddhism is a supplement to my program, not a substitute for recovery meetings. In my book, The 12-Step Buddhist, I tell the whole story, outline the depth and severity of the problems of addiction borne out by the latest research, give an overview of the 12-step programs in Buddhism, and finally, practical exercises on each of the 12 steps. Each step is then treated in detail by introducing several levels of meditation practices from beginning to advanced practices. There are even ways to create Buddhist-oriented recovery meetings, called 12-step Sangha, as I described in a recent how-to article on the website. From the book, spiritual principles defined in AA literature show that the purpose of the 12-step program goes further than to dispel the obsession to drink. The point is to enable the sufferer to become happily and usefully whole. It also says, we feel that elimination of our drinking is but a beginning. A much more important demonstration of our principles lies before us in our respective homes, occupations, and affairs. The 12-step program does afford the opportunity to move beyond such a static, rigid, and otherwise unhappy experience in sobriety. Yet many are at a loss for how to make it happen within the confines of the program. The practicing of Buddhism along with the 12 steps is powerful and can help you work through these difficulties. It helped me after my relapse, and I credit my Buddhist practices as the reason for my second 10 years of sobriety. It is why I wrote this book. By understanding the principles of Buddhism along with the principles of recovery, we can create a spiritual life that is beyond imagination. Using ideas from Buddhism for our higher power, we can see that the Judeo-Christian view of the 12 steps is not the only approach. In fact, the 12-step Buddhist approach allows us to take the mere beginning of a spiritual awakening all the way to complete enlightenment. Okay, well, thank you, Darren Littlejohn, for explaining about the 12 steps. And I would recommend picking up the 12-Step Buddhist book. It's available from Amazon. There is a link to that on the show notes. It's not going to be released until March, but you can pre-order it now. In the meantime, you can visit Darren's website at www.the12stepbuddhist.com. That's THE12stepbuddhist.com. For articles, resources, his own podcast with guided meditations, and more. And Wednesday, we had a very short little question. Should meditations or chanting be on a daily schedule, like the way Muslims pray in the morning and evening, for example? Well, my answer to that was, no, not technically like Muslims, no. Muslims have to pray 5 times a day, at very specific times during the day. Buddhists can meditate or chant at any time. There's no rule about when they have to do it. Monks generally do have specific times of the day when they must do their chanting or meditating, but even then, that's just a schedule set by the individual monasteries or leaders. There's no official Buddhist doctrine on that. Lay people get more flexibility. Everyone is different. I prefer meditating in the early evenings, while some prefer to meditate every morning. Whatever works for you is best. When you are just starting out, it's probably a good idea to experiment with meditation and learn what times seem to have the best effect on you. Once you do know when your optimal time of day is, it's my opinion that it's a good idea to try to do it at the same time every day if you can. That way you get used to the routine, your body gets used to the routine, and you'll find calming down at that part of the day much easier when it's really time to meditate. And earlier, I was talking about being in the present moment. So on Thursday, I put out a koan that demonstrates this, called The Strawberry. Buddha once told a parable in a sutra. A man traveling across a field encountered a tiger. He fled, the tiger after him. Coming to a precipice, he caught hold of the root of a wild vine and swung himself down over the edge. The tiger sniffed at him from above. Trembling, the man looked down to where, far below, another tiger was waiting to eat him. Only the vine sustained him. Two mice, one white and one black, little by little started to gnaw away at the vine. The man saw a luscious strawberry near him. Grasping the vine with one hand, he plucked the strawberry with the other. Oh, how sweet it tasted! And then Friday was the day after Christmas. Here's a little story and a lesson that I learned that I'm going to pass on to you. As I explained a few weeks back, I always celebrate a traditional Christmas with my extended family on Christmas Eve, and then again on Christmas Day with my closer family. It's fun, and more of a family gathering than anything overtly religious. On Christmas Eve, at the big extended family party, there are aunts and uncles, cousins, nieces, nephews, second cousins, friends of the family, and always a few that I can't quite identify. But there's always lots of people. In order to avoid paying out a fortune in gifts to exchange, everyone brings a gift valued at $10, and we play this oddball game where you can pick a known gift or unwrap a random one. I'm not going to go into the details of the game, but somehow, while others got DVDs, books, coffee cups, store gift cards, I wound up with a deck of cards and a whoopee cushion. Now, I personally spent a good deal of time looking for my contribution to the game, a nice set of frosted glass candles. But whoever bought the whoopee cushion not only wasn't thinking about age appropriateness, they couldn't possibly have spent $10 on it. To make a long story short, I got ripped off in this game. Now, I know it would have bothered me a few years ago. I'd have sat there and seethed for the rest of the party, and then griped and whined about it for weeks to come. But the thing is, it didn't bother me. I was able to let go of it, not to be attached to my anger, and not to develop my resentment. Now, I'm not going to say it wasn't there at all, or I wouldn't have noticed the slight and would never have considered writing this post. But the resentment was in control and limited, and I was able to get rid of it quickly and mindfully. I was able to simply tell myself that anger was wrong and to let it go. And it actually went away. I even remember telling myself that it was probably better that I got the junk prize rather than someone who would have been disappointed with it or let anger take over. I sat there in silence, enjoying watching others play the game and walk off with the good gifts. When the game was over, I handed my bag over to my 5-year-old nephew, the youngest one there, and he had a great time running around with the whoopee cushion, blasting it in everyone's face. He loved it, and everyone got a kick out of him playing with it. Now, I credit my equanimity entirely to my Buddhist practice. I'm far more mindful now than I was even only a year ago. When I got home from the party, I got on Twitter and joked about the cushion for a while with other Twitterites. Eventually, someone suggested that the Dalai Lama would probably love to receive a whoopee cushion, and that I should mail mine to him. And if you've ever seen the Dalai Lama interviewed, his sense of humor is very strong. He probably would love one. But there were a couple of rounds of great posts between myself and a few Twitter friends, and I probably ended up having more fun because of that stupid little rubber toy than I would have ever had from a more serious gift. Everything is subjective and open to interpretation. You make your own reality, whether it is contentment or resentment. During that Twitter chat, someone asked, "If one sits on a whoopee cushion, does one attain instant enlightenment?" And of course my answer to him at the time was a joke. You'll certainly attain something, but enlightenment probably isn't it. But upon further contemplation, though, I could have been wrong. Maybe a whoopee cushion can be a step toward enlightenment. And that's all I have for you this week. I'd love to open things up for a guest poster to cover some topic once a week, something like what Darren did this week with his 12-step Buddhist book. You don't need any special credentials or to have written a book. All you need is an interesting viewpoint or story that illustrates some point. If you'd be interested in writing a guest post for the show, send me an email with your topic idea, and I'll send you some details. Now, of course, if you don't want to write a post, but you still have a question on any Buddhism-related topic, send in your questions by email at dailybuddhism@gmail.com or phone them in at our voicemail hotline at 937-660-4949. Or post them in the comments section of any individual blog post. And of course, the Daily Buddhism runs primarily from your donations, and it's easy to help out. Just go to www.dailybuddhism.com/donate and click on one of the options there. You can donate as little as $1. If you do choose to send in either $5 a month or make a one-time donation of $50 or more, you'll also get a free subscription to the weekly Buddhism PDF magazine. But anything you want to send in is appreciated. Keep in mind that the Daily Buddhism daily email newsletter is completely free. All you need to do is go to the site and sign up. See you next week.